Texas Fish and Game Magazine, July-August 2024, audio edition. In this issue, Rock On, Take a Jetty Safari. An epic share lunker year. Is a new state record bass finally in the cards? Chronic wasting disease update. Learning to fly. Experiencing the thrill of fly fishing for the first time. Pompano and permit in Texas. The new spec regs. How will new limits affect trout fishing? Plus, columns. Outdoor news in the Fish and Game Report. Coastal focus reports by professional saltwater guides and more. So listen, learn, and enjoy. CCA and Fish and Game, a decades-long partnership. Inside Fish and Game, by Roy and Ardia Neves. Two institutions have been toiling in the trenches as advocates for Texas coastal anglers for more than 40 years. One of them has been doing it as part of its for-profit business plan. After all, endorsing protection of the very field its customers play on is the definition of good for business. The other has been doing it as a nonprofit mission driven by volunteers and funded by seagrass-rooted donations and at least one stroke of fundraising genius. As the profit-seeking side of these parallel efforts, Fish and Game recognized early on that a partnership with the Coastal Conservation Association, CCA, made perfect sense. CCA is the vocal and physical power plant of coastal preservation in America, from sea to shining sea, with chapters in almost every state that has a saltwater coastline, even Alabama, with that little toe-like appendage dipping into the Gulf between Mississippi and Florida. But CCA's roots, proudly, are right here in Texas. The association was created in 1977 by a group of concerned anglers led by the late Walter Fondren to take a lead role in what was known at the time as the Redfish Wars. Redfish and speckled trout in those days were being annihilated by ruthless commercial overfishing in Texas Gulf waters. The Gulf Coast Conservation Association, or GCCA, as Fondren's group called itself, got busy in a hurry. Within 4 years, commercial gillnets had been outlawed on the Texas coast, and red drum and speckled trout had both been designated as game fish. The rest, as they say, is history. The Gulf Coast Conservation Association grew rapidly from its initial success, adding one strong chapter after another as it spread out from its charter base in Houston, all down the coast and then inland, to San Antonio, Austin, and even the Dallas-Fort Worth metroplex. This early burst of growth was fueled by a steady ground game of local banquets, raffles, and word-of-mouth campaigns. In 1990, lightning struck in the form of an ambitious idea for a membership and fundraising event, a massive fishing tournament. The tournament was christened the State of Texas Anglers Rodeo, or STAR. Its concept was so big in two dimensions, time and space, stretching from Memorial Day to Labor Day and encompassing the entire Texas coast, that the Lone Star State was its only fitting birthplace. STAR was piloted from the start by tournament director Bill Kinney, who proved to be the perfect evangelist not only for this audacious event, but for the CCA cause at large. Under Kinney's dynamic and, some might say, genius-level guidance, STAR quickly became a Texas institution, attracting thousands and, before long, tens of thousands, and then scores of thousands of entrants each year. Not only was the scale of the contest big, its stakes were Texas size as well. CCA's expertise in stewardship of coastal species made it possible for STAR to incorporate a unique feature to the tournament, the release of tagged redfish to be caught as tickets to winning new truck and boat motor trailer packages. As reports came in year after year of anglers catching one of these tagged reds without being entered in STAR, registration became as much a staple for many anglers as their annual saltwater stamp. Genius. But that, and many other enticing adult competition features, was only half the story. With an eye toward CCA's responsibility to the future of the resources under its watch, STAR also implemented youth divisions with scholarships as high as $50,000. With free or nominal entry fees for kids to enter, this one feature probably introduced more young people to the wonders of saltwater fishing than could ever be counted. In the decades since its founding, CCA dropped the G from its name and took on oversight of coastal conservation, not only along the entire United States Gulf Coast, but also the Atlantic and Pacific coasts as well, with state chapters in 18 coastal states, and one landlocked one, Tennessee. In our humble opinion, Star was the main driver of this growth. Its mass appeal helped make possible all the achievements this now national conservation giant has racked up in the post-Redfish Wars era. Hurricane Bill, Kinney, a true force of nature then and now, he is still running Star, grabbed our attention in 1995 and encouraged us to partner up. We jumped at the chance, instantly recognizing the marketing brilliance of the event and the importance of its underlying mission. So here we are, almost 30 years later, still doing everything within our power to support and promote Star. This year, we inaugurated a special e-newsletter, the Star Report, sent every other week during the tournament to our 77,000 base of Fish and Game Report subscribers. Chester Moore is editing each issue with articles to help anglers up their game as they compete in Star, plus news and updates on current standings. If you aren't signed up yet, go to fishgame.com/newsletter. Kinney still has a steady hand on the Star tiller, aided by a dedicated team including Peggy McMillan, Ryan Towns, Kevin Hickson, Lucy DeJesus, Lori Hromas, Elena Yepes, and the selfless volunteers on the Star Tournament Committee. These people, the entire CCA staff, its local and national board members and leadership, and the thousands of member volunteers, are doing God's work every day, literally working to preserve some of the greatest riches ever endowed to humanity. Fondren and the original Redfish Warriors would be proud. Email Ardia at aneves@fishgame.com or email Roy at rneves@fishgame.com. Thanks for listening. Loving Laguna Madre. Editor's Notes by Chester Moore, Texas Fish and Game Editor-in-Chief. Seven tails. Seven beautiful bronze tails with a dot in the middle. That's how many I counted before shooting a white shrimp-patterned fly their direction. The first cast got no response, but on the second, my rod immediately doubled over, and the fight was on. That was the first stop on the first morning of a three-day fly-fishing odyssey in Lower Laguna Madre out of beautiful South Padre Island, Texas. My friend Gray Thornton invited me to join him, and his longtime guide friend, Captain Eric Glass, and I could not resist. Over the last 5 years, I have come to love fly fishing and spend a lot of time at home in southeast Texas pursuing largemouth bass, bluegill, and crappie. But I had never been on a proper saltwater fly fishing trip, which is kind of ironic. I live on the coast and have spent untold hours on the water seeking everything from redfish to flounder and even bonefish. Just not with a fly rod. The red that hit was in the 22-23-inch class and fought like crazy. It was a surreal moment landing my first ever fly red and soaking in the environment. The huge sand dunes, seagrass flats, and clear waters look more like Florida than Texas and allow an angler to easily escape from life's daily burdens. Thornton is president and CEO of the Wild Sheep Foundation and has a travel schedule and workload that's quite intense. I have a lot on my plate with a ministry as well as a wildlife journalism career, so it was just nice to be guys out fishing. When Thornton caught his first red of the trip, Captain Eric Glass told us the remote area we were in can be good for finding tailing reds in the morning, and it did not disappoint. I immediately picked up on Glass's reverence and knowledge of the habitat and the creatures of Laguna Madre. This area here was covered with grass, like you'll see later in another area. Now it's all black mangrove. The mangrove has really done well down here, and even weathered the freeze of 21 with minimal damage, he said. It was uncanny how he would say things like, "There will be a redfish on that tiny little sand flat there," and "There would be a redfish on that tiny sand flat." Fishing conditions were challenging at some level the whole time due to high winds. The first 2 days we saw lots of redfish, along with tons of sheep's head, black drum, and stingrays. I will be the first to tell you I'm a moderately skilled fly fisherman. My casting in the wind needs work, and I'm sort of a bull in a china closet with the gear, but I somehow manage to catch fish anyway. Fly fishing has become a passion because it is a challenge, but mainly because in the sort of close-range, detailed pursuit of fish required by fly gear, you learn so much. Each trip is like a fisheries biologist class of sorts, but it's a whole lot more fun than sitting in a class listening to some professor. It's about matching the hatch, cap sometimes of the day, and mimicking nature in a form that forces you to learn more about it. And I learned a lot watching Thornton fish. He put on a masterclass on day two, catching 4 reds and 3 trout. I squeezed out 1 nice red and a small trout and was grateful for that. But I was more grateful for being in this majestic area with 2 great guys talking about an appreciation for the ecosystem, fisheries, and conservation. Glass uses barbless hooks on all his trips and promotes catch and release. The kind of excitement we experienced catching reds on the fly can only come in the great outdoors. There is a deep love for wildness that rejuvenates a person when they encounter the creatures they grew up dreaming about. And it lets you know that no matter what kind of crazy thing is going on in the world or in your life, great things can still happen. Our final day was a test in endurance. The winds howled, tides were low, and the skies were dim, making fishing tough. Thornton managed to catch a black drum at the end of day, which added some diversity to the trip's bag. And although we both hooked into reds, they got the better of us. But that's fishing. It only made me want to go back and give it another try to experience more fly fishing in Lower Laguna Madre. The Mother Lagoon is a special, special place, and it is worth every bit of admiration it receives. As development engulfs the Texas coast, we need to be mindful of how places like this impact our lives. Redfish need a place to roam, and fishermen need a place to pursue their passion. Life is better on the water, especially when there's a raging redfish on the end of your line and good friends surrounding you. Email Chester Moore at cmoore@fishgame.com. Thanks for listening. There is no I in speckled trout. Pike on the Edge by Doug Pike, Texas Fish and Game Senior Contributing Editor. We've had several months now to consider and reconsider, to hash and rehash the new speckled trout limits. To those of you who still consider the changes somehow unfair or ineffective or otherwise unsuitable to you, without consideration that their purpose is to rebuild and maintain the state's trout population for the enjoyment of all licensed anglers, I say this: come up with something better. Stop griping or stop fishing. Having covered our state's wildlife and fisheries now for nearly 40 years, I've gained solid insight into the department that oversees both and how it functions on our behalf. Additionally, I have friends who are closely tied to fishing and our fisheries on professional levels, and they routinely help me fill in the blanks. 3 fish daily within a 15-inch to 20-inch slot. That's hardly unreasonable given all the alternatives. And one of those 3 can be longer than 28 inches. Those are rare fish, nearly so infrequent that I'd expect to see each of them being ridden by leprechauns in scuba gear. In September, there will come implementation of a $3 tag you can spend if you really, really want to kill a second giant trout and the leprechaun on its back, which is unnecessary in any way or for any purpose. Those fish deserve more than to be tossed into an oven, and skin mounts went out with the hula hoop. During discussion of these changes on my radio show, Weekend Mornings on Sports Talk 790 in Houston or on iHeartRadio, one weekend in April or so, Captain Scott Null responded by email to a caller who wasn't pleased with the way the regulation change impacted my fishing and my time on the water. In his email, Null pointed out something quite telling about that statement. Those who oppose the rules typically speak of short-term outcomes and the way they personally will be inconvenienced by the new regulation, Null wrote. The words I and me and my are littered throughout the lyrics of their sad little songs. On the conservative side, among those who see this as an opportunity to rebuild the fishery so that it is braced to rebound from freeze or spill deep into the future, to keep the resource capable of providing entertainment and an occasional meal for generations to come. Those folks talk of how the new limit will benefit us and them, meaning all anglers in the present and the future. Fishing regulations, like everything else in the world, change, and it's we, every time, who force those changes. When more people move into or out of an area, pressure on natural resources ebbs or flows in parallel. If somehow I woke up tomorrow and there were only 100 people licensed to fish the entire Texas coast, I sure hope my name's on the list. Limits could go up, way up. But because the opposite is almost certain in a country and world so smitten with Texas, lawmakers are compelled to plan for significant future pressure on this treasured spotted resource. If your blood is still boiling over the new limits, turn off the heat. Take a holiday from fishing, and while you're missing it, try to look at it through less selfish eyes. Our wildlife and fisheries, collectively, belong to all Texans. But not a one of those fish belongs exclusively to you or me or anyone else. I've caught plenty of fish and never seen one with a tattoo that read, "Property of Doug," but how cool would that be? I've been a Texas fisherman for more than 60 years, and not once have I considered any hunting or fishing rule change severe enough to make me leave the outdoors. I love fresh trout prepared just so, but unless a fish is of legal length and on death's door from injury during the fight, it gets free and gentle passage back into the water. Short, long, middle of the slot, 30 inches or 3 feet, all the same, back they go. By the time every fish I catch comes to my hand, they've given me all I could ask. The strike, the fight, the splash of water in my face for having embarrassed them in front of all their fish friends. In giving me all that, they earn a chance to put a smile on someone else's face, and I hope the next fisherman is equally appreciative. Rather than grouse about change, be grateful we've still got enough fish to support a year-round season, and that the new limit shines a strong, favorable light on the future of the state's top saltwater game fish. Editor's note: see a complete description of the new trout regulations on page 28 in the Texas Fish and Game staff report. Spec Regs: how will new limits affect trout fishing? Email Doug Pike at contactus@fishgame.com. Thanks for listening. Rock On: Catching Biodiversity on a Jetty Safari. Feature story by Chester Moore. Jetties emerge as prime spots for reeling in sizable catches from modest vessels throughout the summer season. Attracting a diverse array of inland and offshore species, these expansive granite structures mimic the allure of coral reefs. They harbor self-sustaining ecosystems, resembling the intricate food chains of natural reefs. Within these aquatic realms, a hierarchy of species thrives, reminiscent of typical food chains. Let's start near the surface. The upper reaches of jetties at times hold incredible numbers of speckled trout, and the first thing anglers should be mindful of is water clarity. At jetties, I have seen pockets of clear water produce fish when other areas seemed barren of specks. Sandy green water is good. Clear water is excellent, but chocolate-colored water means you need to go somewhere else. Savvy anglers should look for emerging slicks, the small round spots of fish oil spilled when trout feed on shad and other prey items. The smaller the slick, the better, because it means the fish are still nearby. Avoid fishing slicks around crab traps. Those usually come from the bait inside. Shrimp jumping along the surface and birds are a more obvious sign, although at the jetties, birds usually lead to Spanish mackerel more than trout. Birds on the lake, usually trout, are reds. Birds in the surf or at the jetty area could be anything. While shrimp are not a guarantee of trout, ribbonfish, cutlassfish, can be. If you see the smaller ribbonfish, 6 to 10 inches, fleeing from the water, there's a good chance trout are under them. Spanish mackerel will prey on these eel-like creatures as well, but on almost every experience I have had, trout are the predator. Throwing some sort of eel imitation or a silver spoon is a good way to score on these specks. Remember, if you come across large ribbonfish jumping, it is likely not trout. They will actually leap from the water, feeding on shad and other fish. Sheep's head feed throughout the jetty water column, but most of their activity is in the mid to upper range. My favorite method for catching them is using a quarter-ounce jig head rigged with a small piece of shrimp and fished vertically over rock outcroppings at the jetties. I use a braided line in the 20-pound test class. The low-stretch line helps with hook set in the hard mouth since there is no stretch, and it also aids with sensitivity. The sheep's head's bite can be so slight you actually have to watch the line because it can be virtually impossible to detect otherwise. A braided or fusion line can help overcome this, but it can still be tough at times. Many times, they thump a jig pretty hard, but when they go stealth, few fish can pick a bait off of a hook quicker. Fishing a live shrimp under a popping cork is also a great way to catch sheep's head along the rocks. When the water clears up, these fish can be line shy, so use a fluorocarbon leader under the cork for best results. Fluorocarbon is virtually invisible, and it also has low stretch properties, which enhances its sensitivity. Moving toward the bottom layer of the ecosystem, redfish rule. And this is where my friend Bill Killian rules as well. I have never seen a person score on so many redfish at jetties, even when conditions were terrible. Bill always catches big ones. The boat cuts are a good place to start because during tidal movements, you have a lot of baitfish moving through. The boat's cuts in a jetty system are the point with the most intense tidal flow because they are a small opening. You will get lots of shrimp, shad, and crabs pushing through, and the reds will move in and lie in wait. Killian said this is a great spot to throw large, lipless crankbaits like a rattle trap. You will need something large so it can get down deep below the current quickly. Just let it sink and rip it as fast as you can. If that doesn't work, you might try lowering it down and letting it simply flow with the current, he said. Another great spot to find bull reds at the jetties anytime are the deep holes usually found around the southern tip of the rocks and back about 50 yards. These spots are where the current wraps around the rocks and carves out large holes. The reds in these areas tend to move through in small schools or hold over one piece of rock in large numbers. And while reds fight hard, they have nothing on another jetty monster. Stingrays. Stingrays come in two size categories at jetties, large and extra large, and the best places to start are the aforementioned boat cuts. The tidal flow can be incredibly strong in these spots, since a huge amount of water is trying to move through a small space in a short time. Rays will lay on the edge of this flow to mop up on the crabs and baitfish that move through. The same deep holes that reds love are also magnets to rays. On stingray quests, I generally put out several lines with a slip egg weight and swivel, finished off with a wide-gapped hook baited with cut mullet or croaker. It is best to use a steel leader of at least 3 feet in length, as it will help to avoid getting broken off if the ray runs to the rocks. Rays usually take the bait and run with it, especially if they are extra large ones. Jetties are great hunting grounds for anglers seeking big saltwater game. And if you are open to trying some of these strategies and patient enough to give them a chance to work, you can score on true trophy-sized fish. Thanks for listening. An epic share lunker year. Is a state record in the cards? Texas Fish and Game Staff Report. The 2024 Toyota Share Lunker program was full speed ahead and produced an exceptional collection season for the fourth consecutive year. Anglers contributed 19 Legacy Class Share Lunkers from 7 different lakes throughout Texas. 3 new water bodies recorded their first Legacy Class fish, but OH Ivy in West Texas was at the head of the class again this season with 12 entries. Thank you to everyone involved in making another great Toyota Share Lunker collection season, said Natalie Goldstrom, Toyota Share Lunker Program Coordinator. We're grateful that so many anglers caught their fish of a lifetime this season and then decided to share their Share Lunker to support a future full of bigger, better bass in Texas. OH Ivy generated 7 consecutive Legacy Lunkers to close out the 2024 collection season. It has produced an unprecedented number of Share Lunkers during the last 4 seasons, accounting for the final Share Lunker of the 2020 collection season and then exploding for 12 Legacy Class Lunkers in 2021, 2022, and 2024. It proceeded to shatter the single season collection record for that water body with 15 Share Lunkers in 2023. OH Ivy boasts 51 combined Legacy Lunkers and multiple Legend Class entries over the past 4 collection seasons. Key highlights from the 2024 Toyota Share Lunker collection season. 7 reservoirs delivered Legacy Class Lunkers: Fort Phantom Hill, Inks Lake, J.B. Thomas, Nakanichi, OH Ivy, Sam Rayburn, Toledo Bend. 3 new reservoirs with Legacy Class Share Lunkers: Fort Phantom Hill, Inks Lake, J.B. Thomas. 3 new water body records: J.B. Thomas, Inks Lake, Fort Phantom Hill, and 1 new junior water body record, J.B. Thomas. Angler Kyle Hall's Share Lunker 665, 15.82 pounds, made the Texas Top 50 as the 37th heaviest all-time Texas largemouth bass. Angler Kyle Hall recorded a legacy lunker in three consecutive seasons. Six out-of-state anglers etched their name into the program's record book. The anglers hailed from Kansas, New York, Ohio, Oklahoma, and Washington. Angler Larry R. Walker reeled in two legacy-class lunkers in 2024. TPWD biologists implemented a genetic analysis of this year's legacy lunkers and made some incredible discoveries. For example, they determined Cher Lunker 666, reeled in by Larry R. Walker from OH Ivy, was a recapture of Cher Lunker 646, originally caught by Mikelda Criswell on February 27, 2023. A 13.20-pound fish from Lake Athens proved to be the offspring of Cher Lunker 552, which was caught by Randall E. Claiborne on January 12, 2014, at Lake Fork. This is the first time a legacy-class descendant from this specific family tree was discovered in the Cher Lunker program. Of the 19 legacy-class Cher Lunkers, 13 of the fish had secondary relationships to either previous legacy-class fish or other Cher Lunkers that anglers submitted scale samples for genetic analyses. Tissues from a pair of full siblings from Oak Creek were submitted by Criswell through the Cher Lunker app. One of these fish was caught in 2023, and the other in 2024. All of these findings highlight the valued partnership that the Cher Lunker program facilitates with anglers throughout the world. Unfortunately, one of this year's 19 legacy class fish, the 13.42-pound Cher Lunker 662 from Inks Lake, perished due to extenuating circumstances. However, in the last 5 years, the program has achieved an excellent overall fish survival success rate of 94%. The last time a legacy lunker perished in TPWD care was more than 3 years ago, in 2021. The TPWD hatchery teams work diligently to provide the absolute best fish health care for each and every Cher Lunker bass, said Goldstrom. We continue to learn from these experiences and further refine big bass healthcare and life-supporting treatments. Anglers who caught and loaned one of these 13-plus-pound lunkers earn legacy-class status, receive a catch kit filled with merchandise, a 13-pound-plus legacy decal for their vehicle or boat, VIP access to the Toyota Cher Lunker Annual Awards event, a high-quality replica mount of their fish from Lake Fork Taxidermy, and Bass University will provide a swag pack and annual subscription. These anglers also receive entries into two separate drawings, a legacy class drawing and the year-end grand prize drawing. Both drawings will award the winner a $5,000 Bass Pro Shops shopping spree. While the legacy class season has ended, the year-round Toyota Cher Lunker program offers anglers three additional levels of participation for catching bass over 8 pounds or 24 inches in Texas. Each of these levels still provide vital data to TPWD fisheries biologists, helping them to continue to create bigger, better bass in Texas. Anglers who enter data for any lunker they catch greater than 8 pounds or 24 inches during the 2024 calendar year also receive a catch kit, a decal for their vehicle or boat, a one-month subscription to Bass University, and an entry into the year-end grand prize drawing to win a $5,000 Bass Pro Shops shopping spree. Cher Lunker entry classes include the Bass Pro Shops Lunker Class 8-pound Plus, Strike King Elite Class 10-pound Plus, and Lose Legend Class 13-pound Plus. Once a lunker is reeled in, anglers need to enter the catch data on the Toyota Cher Lunker mobile app, available for free from the Apple App Store and Google Play, or on the Toyota Cher Lunker online app at texasscherlunker.com. In addition to providing basic catch information, anglers have the option to send a DNA scale sample from their lunker bass to TPWD researchers for genetic analysis. Anglers who contribute a sample to the program in 2024 will receive a Lose bait cast reel valued at up to $200 while supplies last, with a limit of one reel per angler. Anglers who send in a genetic sample will also get a three-month subscription to Bass University. Instructions for submitting DNA samples are located on the Toyota Cher Lunker website. Sidebar: will forward-facing sonar empower anglers to catch a new state record? Forward-facing sonar is a revolutionary tool that has been making waves in the fishing community in unprecedented fashion. With forward-facing sonar, Anglers can pinpoint the exact location of their target and make more accurate casts, increasing their chances of success. The potential of forward-facing sonar to revolutionize fishing has already been demonstrated in some remarkable ways in light of the ShareLunker program. Take, for example, the case of OH Ivy, where the use of this technology led to the capture of a lake record bass that weighed 17.06 pounds. This breakthrough has left many anglers wondering, could forward-facing sonar be the key to breaking long-standing records, such as Barry St. Clair's legendary 18.18 pound Texas state record caught at Lake Fork in 1992. On one hand, forward-facing sonar provides anglers with a level of precision and accuracy that was previously unheard of. On the other hand, fishing records are not just about technology, they are also about skill, knowledge, and experience. While forward-facing sonar may give anglers an advantage, it is ultimately up to the individual to use that advantage to its fullest potential. Do you think forward-facing sonar will help produce the next state record bass? We would love to hear your comments. Email cmore@fishgame.com. Thanks for listening. Chronic wasting disease update. New carcass disposal rules. Plus, venison to human transmission? Texas Fish and Game staff report. Officials with the National Deer Association are urging caution about a report from the University of Texas Health Science Center, published in the journal Neurology. The article suggested chronic wasting disease, CWD, could have been transmitted from deer to humans through the eating of venison. Caution and accuracy are critical when examining the question of CWD in human health. Until more information about this report becomes available, we urge deer hunters to consider this new report cautiously. First, we emphasize, nothing about this new report changes current knowledge or guidance on CWD in deer. The evidence remains strong that CWD in deer and elk is not causing disease among hunters who consume infected animals. Because scientific certainty is not 100% and prion diseases are still not fully understood, experts continue to recommend CWD testing of all deer harvested in known CWD areas and avoiding consumption of CWD-positive venison to minimize risk. NDA officials reported the brief report focuses on a 72-year-old man who died in 2022 of Creutzfeldt-Jakob disease, CJD, a human disease that is similar to CWD in deer but never definitively connected through causation. We aren't told where he lived. The man reportedly had a friend who also died recently of CJD. We are given scant details about any of this, but according to the report, both men had a history of consuming meat from a CWD-infected deer population. NDA officials pointed out this is not the same as eating meat from a CWD-infected animal. Just because CWD is in the population does not mean the patient ate a sick deer. In many CWD zones, prevalence rates are low and the vast majority of deer are healthy. If either of these patients in fact consumed CWD-positive venison, the evidence for this is not presented or even hinted at in the paper. CJD, which affects about 1 in every 1 million Americans annually and is most common in people over age 55, is known to be sporadic and to appear in localized clusters. No previously investigated cluster has been found to have links to CWD in deer. In fact, experts have looked for patterns or clusters among hunters in the oldest CWD zones without finding any. While the odds of two acquaintances both having CJD are slim, it is not impossible. Just because it is unlikely does not prove a connection to CWD, especially with no supporting evidence for that conclusion other than circumstance. Any assertion that CWD has spilled over into humans needs a full and comprehensive diagnostic investigation, said Dr. Kristen Schuler, wildlife disease ecologist with the Cornell Wildlife Health Lab, in a press release published by NDA. The implications of such a finding would have huge implications for wildlife and the hunting community. You can read more about this issue at deerassociation.com. By the time you read this story, Texas Parks and Wildlife Department officials will have likely made a decision on deer carcass disposal rules in relation to CWD. According to TPWD, currently, hunters who harvest deer within a chronic wasting disease CWD zone must comply with carcass movement restrictions, which require quartering a hunter-harvested animal and leaving the most infectious parts of the animal, i.e. brain and spinal cord, within the zone. This approach helps mitigate the risk of CWD transmission. Current carcass movement restrictions, however, present an inconvenience for those hunters and landowners who have difficulty quartering or deboning deer and/or do not have access to a locker plant or deer processor within a zone. One proposed change would allow them the flexibility to travel to a processor and then have all unused carcass parts disposed of correctly. For most hunters, this proposal does not change how they currently care for their deer after harvest, since many hunters take the carcass to a commercial processor who properly disposes unused parts for them, said Blaise Krzekwa, TPWD, White-Tailed Deer Program Leader. Hunters that process deer at home should dispose of the unused parts in their commercial trash service. Hunters who prefer to quarter or debone their deer at the property where it was harvested only need to leave the remaining parts at that location to follow this new proposed rule. TPWD asserts proper disposal of all potentially infectious material is critically important for reducing the risk of disease transmission. If CWD is not contained and managed, the implications of the disease for Texas and its multi-billion-dollar ranching, hunting, wildlife management, and real estate economies could be significant. TPWD is proposing statewide carcass disposal measures only for unused carcass parts from native deer, i.e. white-tailed deer and mule deer, harvested in Texas that are being transported from the property of harvest. If carcass parts from native deer species are not being transported from the property of harvest, these carcass disposal rules would not apply. Acceptable disposal options include directly or indirectly disposing of the remains at a landfill permitted by the Texas Commission on Environmental Quality to receive such wastes, burying the carcass at a depth of no less than 3 feet below the natural surface of the ground and covered with at least 3 feet of earthen material, or return to the property where the animal was harvested. TPWD is also proposing to allow hunters to debone a carcass at the site of harvest, provided proof of sex and tags are maintained until the hunter reaches the final destination. Meat from each deboned carcass must remain in whole muscle groups and maintained in a separate bag, package, or container until reaching the final destination. What are your thoughts on carcass disposal? Have you ever heard of an issue with law enforcement over deer carcass disposal? Email us at cmore@fishgame.com with your thoughts. Thanks for listening. Not Quite the Best Time of the Year. Bare Bones Hunting by Lou Marullo, Texas Fish and Game Hunting Editor. Many people would agree that the summer months are the best. I am not one of those people. No, sir. And I am not alone. Hunters would agree the very best months of the year are October, November, and even December. Those are the months when we once again find ourselves in the fields and woods in search of our hunting prize. Although sometimes it does happen, you cannot expect to simply walk in the woods, see your prey, and shoot. To be proficient in your sport, you need to prepare, and that could take months. You will also have to prepare your wife to let her know you will have to spend hours away from home. I am sure she will understand. I think she will anyway. Personally, I will admit I have started to slack off on some of my preparations. As I grow older, I convince myself that the months of practice are not necessary. However, it never fails that I will find myself in line at the range, waiting for my turn to sight my rifle in. Here's an idea. Why not go to the range now and avoid the crunch of hunters that wait until the last minute to make sure they are accurate? When I take my bow out, I can shoot up to 40 yards in my backyard, and as long as I have permission from my neighbors, it is perfectly legal to practice in the city. Not so much with my rifle. For some unknown reason, I am pretty sure the neighbors might think I have finally gone over the edge, so to speak. Hey, I might be nuts, but I am not crazy. My wife would not agree with that statement. I digress. I suggest grabbing your rifle and really hone in on your target. After a long season and moving your firearm from vehicle, home, and repeating the process many times, your sights might be off. I remember once I dropped my rifle. It wasn't far or that hard when it landed, but when I checked my sight, it still felt secure, and I was convinced that nothing had moved. Still, I thought it wise to shoot a few rounds just to make sure. To my surprise, I was off a ton. After a considerable amount of time, and about 10 rounds or more, I finally started to hit the bullseye. The only good thing about that is the fact that I was alone in my practice. I did not have to worry about being intimidated by other sportsmen who are carefully watching me shoot. And that alone made me realize that July is the perfect month to sight in your rifle. Bows are a different animal altogether. As I said earlier, I can shoot up to 40 yards right behind my house. There was a time when I would have 3 or 4 bow hunting friends come over to practice with me. We would make a game out of it. Believe me, if you are not having fun doing whatever you are doing, you will not invest the time needed to be the best that you can be. That being said, we would get together and play what we called pig. I have heard the same game called horse, whatever. We would take turns being the shooter. The object of the game is if the designated shooter makes a shot, no matter how crazy it was, the others would have to try to make the same shot. Sometimes it is not an easy thing to do. It might be on one knee, sitting on a log, or twisting your torso so you end up shooting behind yourself. However, it sure is fun. If any of the others miss the shot, then they must take the letter P, and so on, until they take the last letter G and are eliminated from the competition. I have introduced many to the bow hunting sport. I was a master instructor for many years, and when it came time to shoot some arrows, I would blow up a balloon and attach it to the target. I was trying to make it fun for the young hunters, and it really worked. Some would miss the target completely. Others would concentrate, take a serious bead on the target, take their time, release the arrow, and also miss the target. Fun times. But every once in a while, you would hear the balloon break, followed by a roar from the rest of the class. Fun times. The movie The Patriot had a line in it that I always remembered: aim small, miss small. How true that is. The smaller your target, the more you will concentrate and make a good shot. I would tell my students that when they aim at an animal, do not aim at the whole animal. Instead, aim at a hair on the animal. It is true, you will be more proficient that way. I would tell my students, when you finally break that balloon at 25 yards, make the next balloon smaller and smaller and smaller until you are consistently hitting your target, and that target could be as small as a soda bottle top. I tell you, this really works, and you will be a much better hunter for it. Although all the broadhead companies out there will say their broadhead shoots exactly like a field tip, don't believe it. You may find yours really does shoot like a field tip, but you will find many that do not. I strongly advise any bow hunters out there that after they are proficient with their equipment, they should take the time to shoot with the broadhead you are going to hunt with. You may have to make some minor adjustments with your sights. July and August are good months to make sure everything is ready for your opening day. So, if you are not fishing or doing some of the other fun things to do during those hot summer months, check your equipment and be prepared. Email Lou Marullo at contactus@fishgame.com. Thanks for listening.
Learning to fly. Experiencing the thrill of fly fishing for the first time. Feature story by Grayson Highfield. Late August in the northern Wyoming mountains never reached more than 70 degrees. A cool afternoon found me in denim and knee-high muck boots, an interesting choice of attire for wading through the Wood River. But I thought it better to be warm than frozen in sandals and shorts. And I had lost my hip waders a long time ago. In one of my many cross-country moves, I stood on the bank of the river with my mentor, Fred, and a friend from the program, Heather, a woman of a different generation than myself, but friendly and enthusiastic about experiencing this process with me. We had come to this moment after a series of clinics throughout the spring. First, we learned to tie flies in the front area of a local storefront, North Fork Anglers, with the clothing fixtures pushed inward to accommodate our 3 rows. 10 of us gathered around the white plastic folding tables that had been set up and watched as our instructors walked us through how to tie a woolly bugger from start to finish. A month later, We met again outside of the community library and were coached by our mentors on properly casting a line. We stood in the expanse of grass next to a local pond and practiced the repetitive motion until it felt natural, the sun shining as an afternoon shower sprinkled overhead. This process was part of the first Fish on a Fly clinic through the First Hunt Foundation, Wyoming chapter. It included an application process, from which 10 individuals were selected out of 30 applications submitted. I had moved to Wyoming only a few short months prior and was forcing myself through the beginning phases of a major transitional period. This was a new chapter, a journey I was embarking upon on my own while simultaneously mourning the end of a 4-year relationship, nursing a potentially career-ending wound on my too young heart horse, building a new community of friends, and starting a new career. Somewhere along the trajectory of this journey, I decided to not only embrace these changes, but pursue them. A lifelong vegetarian, I had finally decided to take a bold leap and immerse myself in a new adventure. Fishing and hunting were both skills I had long been intrigued by, and I made an ethical promise to myself that were I to begin eating meat again, I would learn to harvest it myself. Fishing seemed like the less intimidating of these two endeavors, and so I found myself researching fly fishing courses between Wyoming and Montana for the spring and summer of 2023. As a semi-broke horse mom, making it on her own for the first time in 4 years, expense was a factor. And when I stumbled across the First Hunt Foundation's fully sponsored First Fish on a Fly course, I leapt at the opportunity and submitted my application. That series of events is what ultimately led me to where I stood. Denim soaked through to my thighs and muck boots sucking in river water with that familiar squelching sound as I carefully placed each step on the rocky bottom and waded my way across and upstream to a nice hole at which my mentor guaranteed we would find trout. Fred coached me calmly through the motions of properly casting my line over and over in ceremonious repetition until I started to feel a sharp tug on my fly as it floated through the water. "When you feel the pressure, flick your rod up and create tension on that line," he told me, and watched patiently as it took me several tries to get the movement right. Patience and repetition attracted me to this discipline more than anything, and catching my first fish was a lesson in both. When I ultimately jerked the line at exactly the right moment and felt the satisfactory tug of tension confirming that I had in fact succeeded in hooking my first trout, Fred grabbed his net and talked me through reeling it in as he prepared himself to unhook the fish and demonstrate how to properly hold and release it. These little movements, I realized, were second nature to a seasoned fisherman, but strange territory to a woman unfamiliar with the craft of fly fishing. I was grateful to be privy to these intimacies, to revel in the artistry of the discipline, as I marveled at the colorfully speckled body of the Yellowstone cutthroat that writhed between my fingers. Fred gently reminded me of the strength of my own two hands as I held this small life within them and coached me through its release back into the river from whence it came. As he ensured, I supported it against the current until it regained the energy it needed to begin swimming again. In as many small moments as it took for me to decide to learn to fish, apply to this program, tie my first fly, stand squarely in this river and reel in my first trout, the creature had revitalized itself, thrust its tail from left to right and right to left, and disappeared once more into the camouflage of the silted brown river rock and blue-gray rushing water. Thanks for listening.
What makes this AR unique? It folds in half. Texas Tactical by Dustin Ellerman, Texas Fish and Game Shooting Editor. The first thing I ask when I'm shown a new AR-15 model is, what's unique about it? With so many different models being so similar, a manufacturer needs to stand out and give the customer a reason to consider theirs over the thousands of other offerings available. Fold AR does that, and it's revealed why in their name. Yes, the Fold AR folds in half. And I don't mean a lazy fold, such as a lame stock adapter, but rather, it folds at the front of the upper receiver, right where the barrel attaches, which then allows a usual overall length of 33 inches rifle fold into a much more compact 17-inch package. Naysayers are the first to point out that one could simply remove an upper from a lower and compact it. Yes, this is true, but not to the level of concealment that a Foldar gives you. Removing a 16-inch barreled upper from a lower still measures over 24 inches, which would be a bit more difficult to tuck away into a small bag and even slower to deploy. Foldar achieves this with their patented tool-less interchangeable barrel system that not only allows you to deploy the Foldar into firing mode by locking into place with one movement of a lever, but it actually allows you to change barrels/gas systems and calibers by removing one takedown pin, just like the ones on your upper and lower receivers. At first, I was skeptical, so I shot several hundred rounds through my sample in order to break it in. In the YouTube video, you can hear the barrel and receiver croaking like a frog as the conical modified receiver that accepts the barrel was reacting to the heat. Nevertheless, the rifle still shot sub 1 MOA after my miniature torture test. Every time I've pulled it out of my bag and test-fired it over the past several months, the rifle has still been zeroed. In fact, when I used the same upper and installed a 9-inch 300B LK on my registered SBR lower so I could keep it suppressed in the same small package as pictured, I was shocked to see that my 100-yard zero was the same as with my first 5.56 NATO 16-inch barrel with the same mounted optic. Surely some of this was just chance, but I was still surprised. The 300B LK SBR package has become my go-to rifle since it's easy to pack with me all the time. After a little training, I can deploy it from my backpack to shots fired in 6 seconds. But quick draw is not the point of the Foldar. The point is to discreetly have a rifle with you. Think of more non-permissible environments where you want to be extra safe but can't carry a rifle case. For me, it's a matter of safety the majority of the time, and yet a convenience when visiting the hunting grounds. Law enforcement, school resource officers, and private security personnel obviously are ordering these for duty too. The Foldar is available in 5.56 NATO, 300B LK, and 6.5 Grendel in several barrel lengths and configurations. You can find this Texas-based company at foldar.com and save 10% with my special code TOPSHOT10. Email Dustin Ellerman at contactus@fishgame.com. Thanks for listening. Pompano and Permit in Texas, feature article by Chester Moore. Last May, I joined my friend Gray Thornton and Captain Eric Glass for 3 days of fly fishing for redfish in Lower Laguna Madre out of South Padre Island. On the way back to the dock on day two, I looked to our west about 15 yards from the boat and saw a tailing fish. It wasn't a red, and it wasn't a trout or a drum or sheep's head. "It's a pompano," I shouted. Thornton said, "Yes, it is." Southern pompanos are not uncommon in South Texas and are occasionally caught in Lower Laguna Madre. But their close cousins, permit, are showing up more frequently on the Texas coast in recent years. Is it possible that we saw a permit, the most coveted flats fish on the planet, on the flats out of South Padre Island? We will never know, but it was a point of conversation off and on for the rest of the trip. Quite a few anglers think they've caught a permit in Texas, but are disappointed to find out it was a southern pompano, a close relative, or even a jack crevalle, similar shape and colors. Christy Reel caught and released the real deal while fishing the Texas City Dike in late March. The Galveston ecosystem has had several small permit caught in net samples over the last few years, according to Texas Parks and Wildlife Department sources. Permit are stunning flat species that get big and are part of the prestigious Flat Slam, which includes bonefish and tarpon. Permit are said to be the moodiest of flat slam species and will often ignore the most perfectly placed lure or fly. Jared Ginn caught the Texas state record in the Gulf of Mexico in 1993. It only weighed 1.5 pounds. I've heard anecdotal evidence of permit close to this size caught in the Galveston Bay complex in recent years from very informed anglers. One of our Texas Fish and Game contributors, Captain Brian Barrera's young client, Ryder Colvin, caught a permit in the South Padre area. It wasn't a monster, but in a very real way, it was the catch of a lifetime. There is evidence that tropical species are increasing in Gulf waters due to warming trends. Are more permit showing up in Texas for this reason? Have you ever caught a permit in Texas? Or maybe a bonefish? If you have, send photos, videos, and stories to seemore@fishgame.com. We will publish them in a future story. I'll never forget seeing that mysterious tailing fish in the flats out of South Padre Island. Whether it was a permit or pompano, it was still super cool and shows the Texas flats have impressive biodiversity. Thanks for listening. Spec regs. How will new limits affect trout fishing? Texas Fish and Game staff report. Rule changes to bag and size limits for spotted sea trout are now in effect across the Texas coast. The new statewide changes consist of the following: 3 fish daily bag limit per angler, a minimum size of 15 inches and a maximum size limit of 20 inches, 1 oversized trout greater than 30 inches allowed as part of daily bag limit. Texas Parks and Wildlife Commission adopted these changes at its January meeting to assist spotted sea trout recovery after several years of below-average abundance. The Texas Parks and Wildlife, TPW Commission, approved a tag system for harvesting oversized spotted sea trout. This new tag will allow anglers to harvest 1 oversized spotted sea trout greater than 28 inches with the purchase of a saltwater fishing license or endorsement. The rule also implements a $3 bonus spotted sea trout tag and a $3 exempt angler tag for individuals who, by law, are exempted from license requirements, allowing the retention of 1 additional oversized spotted sea trout per license year. The adjusted oversized spotted sea trout length and the oversized tag system go into effect September 1st. Anglers can continue to harvest 1 trout more than 30 inches per day as part of the daily bag until September 1st. Thanks for listening. Prepping for the fall. Time to get ready for the best seasons of the year. Feature article by Brian Johnson. It's hard to imagine that even though the temps are soaring outside, hunting season will begin shortly with dove kicking off September 1st, followed by teal season. And there are always great fishing opportunities in that late summer, early fall period. Here are a few tips to get you ready for the season. Get a teal call and learn to blow it. There are 2 distinct sounds that a teal makes. One is a peep-peep type of whistle, and the other is a high-pitched, rapid quack. There are calls on the market that mimic each sound. The whistle is easier to blow, but the quack is sometimes more effective when blown properly. Time is running out, so if you don't have one of each, go shopping now. Pack your mosquito spray and thermocell. Both of these devices are imperative to have in the bag on a dove or teal hunt, or fishing trip for that matter. Without them, you will feel like you have been the victim of a vampire. The skeeters will suck every ounce of blood from your hot, sweating body. Legal stuff. As simple as it sounds, make sure you have your hunting and fishing license and any other additional tags or permits you might need. Will you be needing a federal duck stamp? What about an annual public hunting permit? Make sure you have all of the above before you hit the field and find yourself in an uncomfortable position in a game warden check. Fall's favorite lures. Fall fishing can be intense, and we mean that in a good way. The action can be red hot with the best numeric catches of the year both in our bays and inland reservoirs. If you have favorite lures or favorite color pattern lures, now is the time to stock up. Don't wait until your favorite DOA shrimp color or gulp swimming mullet is sold out. Get them now and stockpile them away so you will be ready when the action hits. Check your waders. If you plan to pull out your waders from last season, go ahead and do it now. Sometimes mice decide to chew waders when they are stored in garages or storage buildings. They may even make a nest in your boot. Other times, waders simply dry rot or tear. Either way, no one wants wet underwear after a hunt, so be sure to do an inspection. Separate teal decoys. Teal decoys are much lighter and easier to haul. Since you will be hunting only teal, it makes perfect sense to use teal decoys exclusively. If you need new ones, the good news is that teal are cheaper than the full-size decoys. Dove decoys. Decoying is an overlooked aspect of dove hunting. We have lots of birds in Texas, and many choose to find a good flyway and position themselves accordingly. Setting up decoys can be a great way to put birds in the shooting zone. File a field plan. This can be as easy as telling a loved one where you are headed and when you plan to return. Leaving this crucial information with someone on shore can help rescuers narrow down where to look if you don't return when scheduled. If time allows, you should always try to fill out a completed float plan and update it as changes occur. Every piece of information proves more helpful than you may think. On a boat, the easiest thing to have is a working marine band VHF radio and a handheld GPS. This will easily allow you to call for help and give rescuers your position if necessary. Cell phones don't always receive reception in the areas you may be going on your boat, so better to be prepared with extra equipment and not need it than need it and not have it. The Coast Guard always monitors VHF channel 16 for distress. Venturing into the woods on a hunting or camping trip has some similar guidelines. A great option is to get a transponder which links to a satellite and can send the GPS coordinate of your location to all emergency response units in your area by the push of a button. Pick one bird when shooting. The most common mistake I see bird hunters make is not picking out an individual bird. The temptation is to just throw up your gun and flock shoot. Remember, if you aim at nothing, that's probably what you will hit. Be patient and pick a single bird out of the flock before pulling the trigger. Thanks for listening. The Fish and Game Report. News of the Outdoor Nation. First major lake in 30 years opens in North Texas. Reported by Texas Fish and Game staff. When Boys Dark Lake in Fannin County officially opened for use in April, Texas got its first major reservoir in more than 30 years. But early results indicate anglers may have a budding new fishing haven as well, thanks to a partnership formed between Texas Parks and Wildlife Department, TPWD, and the North Texas Municipal Water District, NTMWD. TPWD is incredibly grateful and appreciative of the collaborative partnership formed with NTMWD to develop Boys Dark Lake into a world-class fishery for Texas anglers and our visitors, said Tim Birdsong, director of TPWD's Inland Fisheries Division. NTMWD proactively engaged TPWD fisheries biologists, wildlife biologists, and game wardens in 2016 to identify shared goals and strategies for timber management, fish habitat development, fish stockings, boating access, watershed conservation, mitigation of streams and wetlands, enforcement of fishing and hunting laws, and capacity for emergency response. Outcomes achieved over the past 8 years are simply remarkable. TPWD began stocking sunfish and minnows in 2018 during the lake's construction. The fish were placed in four large ponds preserved by NTMWD within the footprint of that lake. Advanced-size Scherlunker bass fingerlings arrived in the ponds in 2019, and when the lake began to hold water in 2021, stocking commenced in the reservoir's main body, along with bluegill and channel catfish. So far, 300,859 pure Florida largemouth bass have been stocked that are direct descendants of a 13-pound or larger bass, said Dan Bennett, Inland Fisheries Division Denison District Supervisor. We are excited to see what sort of trophy bass can be produced from the combined productivity of a new lake and a new bass population originating from so many fish genetically selected for growth. We have already seen submissions of bass over 8 pounds to the Toyota Scherlunker app. A scale sample taken from one 9.05-pound bass should confirm if it originated from one of the original Scherlunker stockings by TPWD. TPWD also created gravel spawning beds and installed commercial fishing habitat and PVC cubes around the lake. TPWD is in the process of raising a few hundred buttonbush and bald cypress trees to plant around the shoreline this summer. These trees will provide additional habitat for the fish. NTMWD consolidated cleared trees to build over 40 large brush piles in the main lake, which are designed to furnish substantial fish habitat for many years. Anglers can target all of the installed habitat structures when casting a line in Boyd Arc Lake by using TPWD's Fish Habitat Structure Interactive Map, which marks the locations. Standing timber and aquatic vegetation, including American pondweed and coontail colonies that spread from ponds flooded by the lake, provide natural cover and habitat for fish. NTMWD did a good job compromising between providing substantial open water areas for pleasure boaters, yet still leaving about a third or more of the lake in standing timber with large boat lanes, added Bennett, That is going to provide excellent fish habitat for a long time. NTMWD developed three public access areas on the lake that feature boat launch ramps, day-use picnic areas, and restrooms. For more information on the public access areas and Boyd Arc Lake, visit the official lake website. Boyd Arc Lake is currently managed with a 16-inch maximum length limit for largemouth bass. It gives the largest bass in the new lake a greater chance to reach trophy size during the first years the lake is open to fishing. All other species are managed with statewide regulations. Anglers wishing to donate a bass over 13 pounds to TPWD's ShareLunker program are able to temporarily retain the basses in a live well between January 1st and March 31st. Anglers who catch bass over 8 pounds are encouraged to enter their catch to the ShareLunker app and submit a scale sample to TPWD for genetic testing. TPWD sustains quality fishing opportunities for 3.1 million freshwater anglers on Texas's 1,100 public lakes and 191,228 miles of streams, creeks, and rivers. In 2022, anglers spent an estimated $11.1 billion on food, lodging, transportation, and equipment while fishing Texas freshwater and coastal waters, and fishing supported an estimated 51,380 jobs in the state. Thanks for listening. Fish and Game Forecast, Saltwater, Upper Coast Focus, Sabine Area, by Captain Eddie Hernandez. Opportunity knocks. The wait is over. It is now officially summer. Well, it actually has been officially summer for a little while, but now it really feels like it. It is hot, period. I guess sometimes we should be careful what we wish for. The good news is that these two hottest months of the year bring with it an endless array of pretty water, techniques, destinations, and opportunities. Just about every inshore species will be biting. The rod-bending action should be hot from the Neches and Sabine Rivers to the Gulf of Mexico. If Sabine Lake itself is your destination, it shouldn't be too difficult locating trout, reds, and flounder. There are several different paths which will lead you to the fish. For starters, the entire eastern side of the lake from East Pass to Blue Buck Point should keep you in the action. Topwaters, plastics, or dragging curly tail grubs, mud minnows, or finger mullet in 2 to 5 feet of water should all work well. A huge advantage of fishing this side of the lake is the number of bayous and cuts you'll encounter as you make your way down the shoreline. Fishing the mouths of these can be killer on trout, reds, and flounder as the warm water and bait fish move in and out with the tide. Another good option is to run the open bay in search of schooling trout and reds, whether gulls and terns are giving up their coordinates or you simply find shrimp skipping along the surface and fish blowing up the calm water. This is an action-packed way to spend a hot summer day. Spoons, rattle traps, plastics, and just about anything else you can reach them with will get hit. The action is fast and furious while it lasts. It's a good idea to fish that area a little longer after the fish go down, then continue running the lake slowly, watching the surface carefully for any sign of activity until you locate them again. A good set of binoculars will definitely come in handy here. If you're anything like me and can't resist the temptation of the Gulf in the summer months, the action at the close rigs should be just as hot as the temperature. The legs of the rigs, as well as other nearby unseen structure, are like magnets for bait fish and predator fish alike. Serious numbers of solid trout are caught at the rigs every summer, and it is at its peak during July and August. Brighter colors like glow and chartreuse are very good choices if you're throwing soft plastics. Most of the time you can get by with 1/4 ounce lead heads, but it's a smart to bring some heavier ones in case the current is stronger than expected. Throwing the cast net a few times on your way to the rigs can be a good move on your part. There are some days when the fish will absolutely annihilate live bait, such as shad, shrimp, and finger mullet, and not even sniff at artificials. Use a fish finder rig, either with or without a cork, and experiment different depths to determine where the fish are in the water column. Do yourself a favor and come see what Sabine has to offer you this summer. Just make sure not to forget extra water and sweat towels. Email Captain Hernandez at ghgs.eddie@gmail.com. Thanks for listening. Fish and Game Forecast, Saltwater. Upper Coast Focus, Galveston Area. By Captain Derek York. Beating the Heat. Early mornings and late evenings may be the theme for a lot of us during July and August. With temps nearing triple digits each day, you almost hope to get some of those sea breeze summer showers while out fishing, just to survive this part of the summer. With the recent trout regulation changes going to 3 fish per person and a 15 to 20 inch slot, anglers will potentially be able to chase more species this summer, like redfish, black drum, sheep's head, and flounder if the trout are biting good early. Most fishermen will be targeting spotted sea trout along the many reefs in our bay system and on the Galveston and Bolivar beachfronts. When targeting sea trout, a lot of the same tactics for other species will work for you as well. Soft plastics, top waters, live bait such as shrimp under a popping cork and croaker fished on a Carolina-style rig are all go-to techniques that have stood the test of time and produced year after year. Finding bait along the beach and in the bay is key, along with moving water. This will give you a good starting point, and once you find the fish, continue to cast or drift in the same area for best results. But be sure to always be quick on your drag when that bull red hits. We have boated a lot of bull redfish while drifting on the reefs the last several years, and they always catch people off guard when they hit. A lot of my time is spent in the bay during the early part of the day in the summer, but I typically move out to the jetties later in the morning, hoping to target some larger species near the pass or just offshore. Sharks, jacks, and numerous other pelagics show up in huge numbers off Galveston this time of the year. And on a good, calm day, we will usually head offshore to look for weed lines and check the channel marker buoys and nearby platforms for cobia. Most people are surprised when we come across these unique fish on the surface, often reaching over 60 pounds. And once hooked, you better hold on for the battle that is to follow. I typically have one or two larger 8,000 size spinning reels rigged up with a fluorocarbon leader in 60-pound test with a small circle hook on it to pitch a live bait at these fish. After landing one, they make great table fare and are perhaps my favorite fish to make fresh ceviche out of. One thing to think about this summer is to make sure and pick up a copy of the current Texas Lakes and Bays Fishing Atlas. You'll have access to thousands of potential new fishing spots and possibly learn where more boat ramps are in your area you may not be utilizing. With the increased pressure it seems we have every year, a new ramp to use may be the best thing yet. Email Captain York at spotstalkerfishing@sbcglobal.com. Thanks for listening. Fish and Game Forecast, Saltwater. Upper Coast Focus, Matagorda Area, by Captain Mark Talasek. Having a good day. What constitutes a good day on the water? Full limits? Trophy fish? The definition can have different meanings for everyone. Any day on the water is a blessing. Taking in God's creation helps recharge our human battery. As a fishing guide, you have to communicate what your customers are looking for. Most people are looking for something to bend their pole. Some of my clients have fished with me for 30 years and have different expectations. A safe trip when nothing breaks is good for most. Some clients come to learn different techniques, bait, presentation/spots, etc. Full limits or a trophy entice others. Just being on the water satisfies most. I have been fishing Matagorda for 40-plus years. Things have definitely changed. Limits, estuary, population, fish and human. There are not as many fish as there were before. I have had 50 trout limits in less than an hour of fishing under birds. Stuck 60 flounder in less than half an hour with clients. I have caught 5-pound redfish every cast until you get tired of catching. We still have days like that, but they are few and far in between. The guides were having a powwow at the bait camp waiting for clients. We were discussing what we were going to do for the day. Wind was blowing hard and had the water chocolate. Most were going for black drum. Never thought it would come to this. The target species has always been trout. With numbers declining after the freeze a few years ago, redfish have become the staple. Black drum has been another way to bend the pole lately. Might not be as good as trout, but they taste good and are fun to catch. Don't get me wrong, we still target trophy trout, but times are changing, so you have to adapt. It all makes for a good day on the water. Summer conditions are starting to be more consistent. When the wind lays, we are boxing trout on mid-bay reefs. Redfish and black drum are getting better in the shallow water. Live shrimp under a popping cork is the best. Flounder gigging has improved at night. This has been a late start for everything, in my opinion. Email Captain Tolasek at marktolasek@sbcglobal.com. Thanks for listening.
Fish and Game Forecast, Saltwater, Middle Coast Focus, Port O'Connor, by Captain Kim Golden. Looking for something different. July and August in the Port O'Connor area bring us many opportunities for inshore and nearshore targets. Our water temps are certain to be high, and being aware of your surroundings can sure make a difference in your fishing success. As a guide, I have a general idea where I want to be based on the day's conditions and the target species of my anglers. However, I'm always on the lookout for opportunities along the way. I'm often asked what I'm looking for as I scan the top of the water. My generic answer is always something different. What qualifies as something different? Here are the top four that get my attention. 1. Off-color water. A strip or section of water that appears dirty or off in color from the surrounding water. This can be a sign of fish activity or a combination of water movement over a certain bottom structure. Every now and then, you get both. 2. Dumping water. A drain that's lined up with the wind so that it's dumping water from one area to another can hold opportunity. Bait is often mixed in with moving water, and predators can make short work of the buffet line. You'll be fishing in the drain or downwind from this structure. 3. Windward pinch points. This setup causes water to move differently and faster than the surrounding water. The wind is pushing water towards a narrow opening, which creates accelerated pushing and pulling of the water flow. Bait fish are often caught up in the current, and predators find easy meals ahead of the points. In this scenario, you'll be fishing upwind of the structure. 4. Bait, bait, bait. The presence of bait is always a good bet. Finger-sized bait fish flipping or bait being busted by a hungry predator are good clues. I love to see a linear area of bait flipping along and just inside the grass line or drop off of a sand grass flat. If you're fortunate enough to fish a flat surf day, keep an eye out for bait in that first gut. With warming water temps this time of year, try fishing up shallow early morning. As the sun rises and temps warm, some fish may begin to gradually move from shallow to deeper, cooler water. Focusing on these ledges or drop-offs just off shallow flats can certainly pay off. I hope this information helps you make a game plan and leads to landing your favorite targets around the coastal bend. As always, be safe and be nice to each other on the water. Tight lines? Email Captain Golden at kimgoldenfishing@gmail.com. Thanks for listening.
Fish and Game Forecast, Saltwater, Middle Coast Focus, Aransas to Upper Laguna, by Captain Richard Thompson. Deep in the heat of Texas. Summer is here, and we are feeling it as the temperature and heat index are brutal. It is no surprise to us down here in South Texas. Being prepared for this type of harsh environment allows you to manage through these dog days of summer on the water. With that said, wade fishing is a must for us, almost like jumping in a cool pool after mowing the lawn. Our strategy during the summer months is leaving the dock early before sunrise so we can be at our spot as the sun is coming up. After doing this thousands of times, it still gets my adrenaline pumping as we prepare ourselves to slide into the water, anticipating that first massive topwater blow-up. Typically, our first stop of the day is on some type of flat that we know has been holding a lot of bait. These fish are cruising the flats looking for that first meal of the day, South Texas breakfast taco. Haha! Our early morning arsenal is topwaters, Mansfield knocker, with J-hooks, allows us to fish areas that typically have floating grass here in the Upper Laguna Madre. It allows the grass to shed off the J-hooks, unlike the treble hooks. You will definitely have a few miss hookups with the J-hook, but being able to work a top water on these flats will pay off tremendously. We are also still throwing our soft plastics early as well, but utilizing lighter lead heads, 1/16 ounce salty head, and or a weedless style. This allows you to keep the lure moving through the tighter water column without hanging up on the grass on the bottom. One of our favorite baits lately has been the 6-inch Coastal Brew Baits Nuke Juice, as they have been producing larger solid trout, and it gives you an opportunity to catch your PB with this larger profile lure. As the water temperature climbs, the trout and redfish will slide off the flats and head to the ledges as they position themselves to ambush the bait coming off the flats. This can be no less than 1 feet to 3 feet drop in depth. During the major or minors after the temperature rises, we definitely are keeping an eye out for slicks and nervous bait. Depending on the type of customers I have, we also do a lot of drift fishing, and our strategy is consistent and very similar to our wade fishing techniques. One of our favorite locations we key on is the east shoreline of the upper Laguna Madre from Bird Island to the Meadows. This area has an abundance of flats with distinct drop-offs from 3 to 4 feet in some areas. The redfish, black drum, and trout use this ledge as a highway and are always on the move. We also fish the spoils off the intercoastal in this same area, which has an obviously quite deeper drop-off, with the intercoastal being nearby. Something that is really fun for novice fishermen is targeting the huge schools of black drum this time of year. In my opinion, black drum doesn't get the recognition as it deserves being a sport fish. They fight as hard as a redfish and are pretty darn tasty to boot. With the new trout regulations this year, this will be a species we will be targeting. I want to recommend that you plan your day around the major and minor feed times, and as these times arrive, you are positioned in an area with good water and bait, as you will see an increase in your successful harvest. As always, during this time of year, our coastal waters are heavily populated with recreational boats, kite surfers, kayakers, and jet skiers, and it is up to everyone to think about being safe on the water and practice being respectful and responsible towards each other, because we all want to have fun in the sun. Email Captain Thompson at rnkcoastaloutfitters@gmail.com. Thanks for listening. Fish and Game Forecast, Saltwater. Middle Coast Focus, Corpus Christi, by Captain Jake Wheelis. Calm hot days. The dog days of summer are upon us once again. I'm fortunate to live, in my opinion, in the best place on earth. I can hunt and fish 365 days a year, but there are 2 months out of the year I'm not a huge fan of, and it's the back half of July to the middle of September. With hot temperatures, low wind, and historically speaking, low tides, let's dive in to how we will continue chasing fish and getting bites. July and August will bring challenges, just like the rest of the year, and how you tackle those challenges is the difference between a successful day to a grind. So that being said, let's talk about our approach to a day of fishing in the dog days of summer. As far as country and environment that I'm going to be looking for during this time of year are flats with a drop-off and a secondary drop-off that we can still wade with the pushed-out tide. I will still fish the top of the flats early, but recognizing when the fish are pulling to deeper water is the key. As the water warms, the fish are going to pull into deeper water, whether it be guts or the edge of spoil banks and flats. As this happens, try to read the water as to what is happening, paying attention to what the bait is doing. Is it starting to migrate to deeper water and still jumping and acting nervous? The simple version of this is to follow the bait to the fish, paying attention to your surroundings, not just what's going on right in front of you. Adapt to what the fish wants to do. My lure box gets very simple this time of year, with Lil John XL, Bass Assassin Straight Tails, and Small Top Waters. Fish have made the time-honored transition to a shrimp and fin fish diet, and they are very active in chasing bait. They are going to eat small, and a lot of it, since they have the energy to do that in the warmer water of summer. I'll be what I like to call swimming a bait, which is a lot more working it more erratically this time of year on my top waters. I'll still be changing my cadence from a fast walk the dog to a slower walk the dog and adding a pause to every few twitches. In short, find what the fish want to eat and don't get a hair trigger on blowups. Wait to feel the fish eat. In closing, please remember to hydrate and keep plenty of water on the boat. This time of year is no joke with the heat. That being said, please only take what you need and practice CPR. As always, tight lines and good times. And if you see me out there, come introduce yourself. Email Captain Wheelis at wheelis85@gmail.com. Thanks for listening. Fish and Game Forecast. Saltwater. Lower Coast Focus. Baffin Bay Area. By Captain Jared Merritt. Fallout of New Trout Limits. There are a few different ways to look at how effective the new sea trout regulations are on our beautiful Texas waters. My report is on the Baffin Bay area, and I am addressing that portion of the coast. Now that the new limits are set in place, we are seeing the impact of it. We have started to see a slight economic decline in the area due to the new regulations. It has led to a downward trend in people traveling to the area to fish because they are deterred by the three trout limit. This change has affected everyone from bait shops to lodging and fishing guides. Although there are many that blame the uptick in the number of guides along the Texas coast for the depletion of the trout population, this is not the sole factor in our area. There are now a large number of recreational fishermen running boats up and down the coast, as well as a greater number of pier and bank fishermen. In fact, many fishing guides try to be as conservative as possible when it comes to the trout population, as our livelihood relies on it. Our groups range from wade fishermen with lures, trophy trout fishermen, and families fishing live bait who enjoy watching their kids hook up to their first saltwater fish. The trips vary from catch and release to keeping the limit allowed. Each client is different, and we provide the service that is asked of us. With that being said, I personally don't agree with the slot size. My concern is that we are now putting pressure on a specific size of trout and depleting the number within that size range. With the trout we are seeing on a daily basis, the reasoning behind the size change does not add up. It would be better if TPWD put tougher regulations on applications for guide licenses and currently licensed guides to eliminate those who do not pursue it as a career. We were disappointed that TPWD did not offer a meeting in the Baffin Bay area, especially after they claimed we were some of the ones hit hardest after the 2021 freeze that impacted our bay system. The biologists they sent to the area used gill nets and relied on a small number of the local fishing population to establish their results and make their decisions. They also treated the entire Texas coast as a whole, which seems highly unfair, as each ecosystem and trout population varies throughout the entire coast. The trips we can offer this season are still featuring plenty of personal best trout and redfish, along with the occasional black drum trips. Let's fish the known structures and shorelines that are indisputably harboring reasonable sizes and amounts of fish. Bait is working and becoming the choice on the south shore and out at the mouth of Baffin Bay. The backside of the creeks are still producing good drum numbers with redfish and the occasional trout on the bottom. The pier fishing is promising in the wind we've had, but timing is key. We strive to be highly respectful of the resource as our livelihood relies on it. There is always controversy when it comes to the economic impact of stricter changes and managing wildlife. Don't let the limits discourage you. Fun is still here. The guides around Baffin Bay are dedicated, talented, and still can put excellent memories together. That is what we strive to do and hope that families, companies, corporations, and just brother and sister groups are still willing to allow us to put memories in their fishing scrapbooks. Email Captain Merritt at jaredmerritt@gmail.com. Thanks for listening. Fish and Game Forecast. Saltwater. Lower Coast Focus, Lower Laguna Madre. By Captain Brian Barrera. Gear up for big fish. Time to put away the light tackle and gear up for some big fish. With July and August in mind, all I can think of is the winds start to calm, the bugs start to bite, the mornings are sticky, and the fish are big. More consistent weather, with calm mornings and slightly breezy afternoons, create lots of new opportunities for anglers in our fishery. From deep water schools of big bull reds to kingfish flying out of the ocean and shallow water snook to big black drum, anglers can pick their poison on what they'd like to try to catch that day. Big bull reds out to 45 inches can be found cruising the inlets or deeper waters like the intracoastal waterway, bridge channels, and deep coves. The best way to get bit by one of these behemoths is surely a live or cut-bait rigged drop-shot style cast away from the boat towards structure or dropped directly off the side of the boat, if in deep enough water. Hold on tight and bring some bigger gear in the 4,000-6,000 size range with minimum 30-pound braid and 30- to 40-pound leader. If lures are your game, then try a big spoon or weighted pre-rigged swim bait such as a DOA Lures Bait Buster. Kingfish can be caught at rapalas or free-lining ribbonfish into the current, trolling rattle traps and rapalas, or chunking heavy spoons either off the boat or off the jetties. Look for these fish to be more aggressive and showing up in numbers during heavy incoming tides that provide clear water within casting distance. Snook tend to hang out on the flats in number during these months. Don't be afraid to throw a big topwater out with a 30 to 40 pound leader line on it. If they're being picky, try bottom. Try bouncing a heavy jig around them, and if they're being really picky, give the old cast net a toss and see what you can pull up to toss at them. I suggest fishing structure for snook, oysters, docks, grass beds, and channel edges. Where are all my meat haulers? This is the time to shine with easy limits of black drum. They tend to gather in giant schools, providing quite the fun fishing experience for all anglers, especially for novice fishermen or children. Cruising channel edges using sides can help you locate them quickly. Live or dead shrimp are generally what they like to eat best. These kinds of schools can create a gathering of many boats, side by side. Drum wars. Try to enjoy the fun, so upsize your gear a little bit so you can control your fish a little better and don't get tangled up with other anglers around you. Email Captain Barrera at captbrianbfishing@gmail.com. Thanks for listening. This concludes this audio edition of Texas Fish and Game Magazine, July-August 2024. We hope you've enjoyed this issue. Print and digital versions of this publication are available at www.fishgame.com. This has been a production of Texas Fish and Game Publishing Company, LLC. Copyright 2024. All rights reserved.